You're listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves.
Welcome to Atlanta Baseball Talk, show number 381 and our 10th full season of the podcast. Today is Sunday, August 27th, 2017, and my name is Steve. I'm joined by both Hammy and Kurt, and guys, it is to the exact day, the 10th anniversary of the very first show that we ever recorded. So happy anniversary, guys.
Happy anniversary.
Yeah. I mean, back then, Kurt was not a twinkle in our eye yet, Ham.
Or a dull thud.
And the show was called House of Braves Talk.
That's right.
And we went by the moniker of Hot Ham and Steve because somehow that was going to be funny.
It is.
No, well, funny, embarrassing. Yeah, I don't think it's what we were going for.
Yes. It's funny in this type of setting.
You guys should follow my Twitter handle, Hot Ham and Steve. It's very good.
I keep getting blocked from that for some reason. I think my firewall won't allow that.
All right, so guys, in tonight's show, we'll take a few more trips down memory lane from the past 10 years. We'll talk about the headlines from the past week, and we'll start things off with a very special guest to help us celebrate our 10th anniversary. But first, a quick break. We're very happy to be joined by Braves alum and Fox Sports South analyst Jeff Francoeur. Jeff, it's great to have you on. How you doing today?
Good. Thanks, man. Appreciate y'all having me.
Well, thank you. So, look, Jeff, let's start with the present. How's your first full year out of the game and transitioning to broadcasting treating you?
Well, I'll tell you, the fact that I got to go to Greece for 10 days for my 10-year anniversary and go to Canada and play some golf, it's been pretty darn good. it's been fun. It really hasn't been that much of an adjustment, I think, just for the sole fact that, you know, I played hard. I gave everything I had. And so kind of when I was done, it was kind of one of those things I left it out there. But being able to do this and still be involved has been big. And plus, I got a 4 and 2-year-old, and so I'm kind of home with them now being able to do stuff. So, you know, frankly, I'm really enjoying myself.
Well, that's great. And good to be back home for you, I would think.
Oh, yeah. Sleep in your own bed. You can't beat that.
All right, Jeff, let's talk about the current team and focus on the kids a little bit. What do you like so far that you see in Ozzie's game?
Well, I think one thing I love about Ozzie is he's obviously energetic. He's very talented. But, you know, I'm a big guy on switch hitters. And, you know, I think I've just been around enough of them to see how good they are, to see how consistent they can be, because you're not seeing the ball, you know, just from one side. You're getting to switch it up. And that's one thing I like about him. I think he's got nice little average from the left side, and he's got some pop from the right side. You know, he reminds me of Furcal a little bit, as far as, you know, I remember Fuki would always hit good from the left side, and from the right side, you know, his average might not be as high, but boy, he had a lot of pop in his bat and could drive one out of the ballpark. So I've been very impressed with him and his demeanor. You know, just last night, for instance, watching his eye, you know, taking pitches, it's been very fun to watch.
Yeah, and he doesn't seem overwhelmed by it from day one. Do you agree with that, too?
Yeah, that, from a baseball standpoint and from just a, you know, a personal standpoint, professional, you know, his age, it just doesn't show. It's been fun to see him come along.
All right, Jeff, play GM for a minute. Do you make Camargo super utility guy next year or pencil him in at third base?
You know, I think depending on what you do at third base, you know, I think if you got a chance at the free agent market or trade to get a proven guy, I don't think it's a bad idea to go ahead and get him. If you go into the season with Camargo starting at third base, I don't think it's a bad thing either. And so I think that's a good situation to have, because you let that play itself out. You know, if he's going to be super utility guy, I know I'm going to get him in the lineup. He's going to play quite a bit, you know, give guys breaks. If I go out and I can get a third baseman through a trade or something like that, then great. It's a great problem to have. But I also think having him start the year at third base is one of those things that's a good problem to have.
All right, Jeff, move into shortstop. So lots of parallels with you and Dansby, right? As faces of the franchise, local guys to Atlanta, early success. Have you had any one-on-ones with Dansby about his career?
Yeah, we've talked a little bit. You know, it's funny. You try to keep a nice balance. You don't want to be that guy that's kind of overwhelming him and, you know, feeling like, you know, this. So I've sent him some texts. We've talked on the phone a couple nights after games. You know, he's given me a call. He knows that what I went through, and I've shared some advice, and he knows if he ever wants to call me that it's wide open. I told him any time of day, any time of night, you're out west, you need to talk, because it's not fun. You know, it really is not. As great as baseball is, when you're struggling, especially when you're expected to do so much, it's frustrating, it's tough, and you feel like you're battling it, you know, by yourself, and it's an uphill battle. So we've had a few of those talks, and they've been good. But like I said, I've also let him know that he's got to experience some of this for himself, and he's got to find a way to dig himself out. You know, I told him, the one big thing I've told him is do not let all these voices get in your head. Pick out a couple people that you really trust, you really like, and go with it. You know, do not let them tell you how to play the game, what you need to do. And, you know, I think he started to do that, and you've seen him look a lot more relaxed at the plate since he's come back.
Yeah, no, it's been amazing. I mean, they certainly weren't going to call him up as early as they did, lest the Camargo injury, you know, didn't happen. But it's amazing the success he's had.
And sometimes that works out great like that, you know. Sometimes I said all he needed maybe was a rest. And, you know, quite frankly, sometimes it's nice to get a kick in the butt, man, no matter how good you are or what you're doing, all of a sudden, shoot, you know, Ozzy's up there and these other guys, and I'm back in AAA now, man. I better get it in gear. And, you know, like I said, the focus, the intensity, all that looks great right now.
So, Jeff, was part of that advice to him from your own experience? Do you look back and think you let too many voices in?
Absolutely. I tell people all the time, I honestly do not regret anything about my career as far as, you know, playing with different teams, doing this. The one thing I regret that if I could go back when I was young is that I would have listened to people. I would have listened to some of these guys tell me, you know, things I need to work on and stuff that's going to happen down the road. But it's so hard, you know, for me, you know, Dansby came up and kind of did. But, you know, for me, after my rookie year, I drove in 100 RBIs 2 years in a row.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a nice 2.5 year period there. And so it's tough. It's like TP said, when you're, you know, hit when my first full year in 06, when you hit 30 home runs and driving 100, he's like, it's hard to tell you to change something. But I think if I could go back, you know, I would have said, man, I need to change this sooner than later, because at some point I'm going to have to make that adjustment. And I just wasn't able to.
Yeah. All right, so let's go back to 2005, Jeff. When you got called up, who were you most nervous around or about talking to on the big club?
I'd have to say it was probably Smoltzy, just from a sole fact of, you know, how much I respect him as a person, you know, and a player, you know, golfing, just all the stuff we did and had in common. And I grew up, you know, I grew up watching Chipper. But, you know, I really grew up watching Smoltzy, you know. So for me, it was such a, you know, surreal thing to think that I was 7 years old at 91, you know, sitting with my dad watching game 7 of the NLCS and then the World Series. And, you know, I'm watching Smoltzy pitch, and now here it is 14 years later, and, you know, I'm getting an opportunity to play with him and go golf with him and do all these fun things. And so for me, that was very, the most nervous I was. You know, I was excited, anxious, but also very nervous.
Yeah. So in 2005, I mean, obviously everyone knows the Baby Braves, all the guys you came up with. Who was the guy, who was the veteran on the team in 2005 that took you and the rest of the rookies under their wing and sort of helped them, you know, acclimate?
You know, Chipper and Smoltzy were great. I always say the one guy for me, I know it's different for a lot of people because he wasn't the most outgoing guy in there, but Andrew was awesome to me, you know, and being an outfielder playing right next to him, you know, he never was like the you know, lovey dovey, you know, pat you on the butt, say great job. But he always made sure that I was in the right place where I needed to be, or, you know, just other stuff. If I needed to, you know, ride to the field, just he'd shoot me a text at 1:00, I'm leaving at 2:30, you know, just little things like that that really made things a lot easier. And it meant even more because I was with him all the time in the outfield. And so that was important for me.
Yeah. So Jeff, looking back on Bobby Cox, what are your impressions now after playing for him and having time away from the game? What do you remember most about Bobby?
Man, I'll tell you what, after playing for other managers, and I was lucky. I got to play for some other really good managers, but I'll tell you what, man, you get spoiled with Bobby because it's just, you always know where you stand with him, and he's so darn positive. You know, it's like, you want to, you know, slam your bat and, you know, tell yourself you stink so bad, and Bobby somehow will, you know, make you think that you're, you know, 8 of your last 10 when you've struck out the last 5 times in a row. And, you know, he would just instill that confidence in you. And the best thing I remember about Bobby, I think, is probably, you know, with Bobby, I got thrown out 5 times as an Atlanta Brave while Bobby was there, and 4 times Bobby got thrown out with me out of the 5. So you always knew he was going to go to bat for you, and that was the best feeling.
That's great. You know, so I want to ask about that because as fans watching Bobby's post-game interviews after it was a bad game, for example, and he'd be saying all the positive stuff, for me personally, I'd be like, you know, it feels kind of disingenuous. It's coach talk. But how was it as a player? Did you believe it? I mean, did it really get through to you, even if you knew you had a bad game?
Yeah, because, you know, he's so good as Bobby played for a cup of coffee in the big leagues. And Bobby will tell you he wasn't very good. And I've always said some of the best managers are that way because they know how hard the game is. You know, that's the one thing sometimes with Chipper, you know, it's tough to talk hitting sometimes with him because it came so easy to him and he knew what he wanted to do and he could roll out of bed and just hit. And, you know, Bobby knew how hard the game was. So, you know, going 0-for-4, he knew that stuff was going to happen, that you had to grind it out. And I always thought that's what made him such a good manager. Now, people only saw that one side of him in his interview. We used to know he'd go in his office and close the door, and you could hear him just screaming because he was so mad. But he would never do it at a person. But we knew how intense he was and how much he cared. And so I think that's why it always felt good to hear a positive come out of him.
That's great. All right, Jeff, let's end with this. What do you think is a realistic record for the team next year, 2018?
I think a lot of it depends to me. You know, I said this year I really thought we had a chance to go 500. And, you know, we were at that 45-45 point, and some things just didn't work out. And that's part of the gig. You know, it hurt. Freddie got hurt for a while. Then, you know, Matt got hurt. So, you know, we've got new pitchers up now. So I think a lot of it's going to depend. I think we have a chance to be close to 500 next year. I really do. If somehow we go out and get an ace and get a Sonny Gray, get a guy like that this offseason that's under control and can be here and be a top-of-the-line starter and give these other guys some breathing room, you know, be able to push Julio to a 2, you know, Fulte to a 3, and let these guys kind of be more in line with what they are, I'll tell you what, I truly believe you could make a run for the wild card. You know, I think it's going to be another couple of years with – just Washington with how they're loaded, stacked. They're going to be tough to beat the next couple of years. But there's no reason that in another couple of years we can't be, you know, wild card next year and in the division hunt in another year or two.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, the pitching should really be in a good place in 19, and then things get really interesting.
And that's what to me, I've always said it. I like the idea of developing pitchers, you know, getting younger guys because – I always feel like it's easier to go on the open market and get a bat than it is a pitcher. No one wants to give pitching away, especially when you have it. And so if you can find pitching, develop pitching like we've had, get them in trades, that way, you know, when they are set and we feel like we got a nice rotation, you go out and get a couple big-time guys in free agency to help out with Freddie and, you know, hopefully Ozzy and Dansby and these guys and really kind of, you know, set up the future.
Yeah. All right, folks, watch Jeff on Fox Sports South the rest of the season. Jeff, loved you in the booth last night. We're recording this Saturday. I understand you'll be in there again tonight. And thank you so much. Really, we appreciate you having on. It's great to talk to you.
Hey, good. Happy 10th anniversary, man.
Thanks. Appreciate it, Jeff. You take care. So, guys, 10 years in the books. What are some of your favorite moments from our first decade, Ham?
I have two. And the first one we talked about recently for some reason, but the Nate McLouth homer against the Phillies when we were down three runs in the bottom of the ninth. I think this was 2010. It was. Against the Phillies, down three runs, and we're all at that game. So me, you, Curtis, Scott, and Ballpark Frank. And they hit four home runs between the ninth and the tenth inning to win it, culminating in Nate McLouth hitting a homer, the walk-off homer, and them all clearing the dugout and him coming to the empty dugout. So being there with you guys, that was like one of my favorite baseball memories over the past 10 years. And I think that's the only game that the three of us have actually ever seen together while doing this show.
As insane. And it was the only good thing that Nate McLouth ever did for the Braves.
It is. It is.
And then wasn't he getting booed like every at bat in that game? Because he was so terrible. And then he got that hit and he like everybody started cheering and he almost had this like air about him as he wandered the bases like stick it up yours.
God. And you guys remember that when they announced the McLouth trade, it was also the same day that they announced that they were just releasing Glavine. That was all that like same day or same two days.
Is that right? Wow.
Yeah. Very unceremoniously getting rid of Glavine.
Not one of my favorite moments. But other one is more about the show. When in an early attempt to mix up the format a little bit, we decided that I was going to pretend to be Frank Wren and you guys would all ask me questions with me posing as Frank Wren. So we thought that was a good idea. And then on top of that, for some reason, I decided to pretend that Frank Wren had been drinking prior to the show, or he was at a bar and gave some really belligerent and all over the place answers. So I don't know. That was a failed experiment. We never did that again. But it was
no,
sort of a
but
highlight.
But it has given us a lot of joy over the years, and it was my Halloween costume last year.
Drunk
Frank Wren.
Yes,
I think we got more hate mail from Drunk Frank Wren than any other thing we've done.
There were
ever.
There were a few fans, though. I will say that still out there. There are still, and he could come back at any time. Fair warning.
That's right.
Yeah. That's like Song of the South. It's buried now in the vault, never to be brought out again.
And he'd have to have like a really thick Boston accent too, Ham, now that he's with the Red Sox.
No, it would still be him from that era. Still Drunk Frank Wren.
All right.
Yeah.
Curtis, how about you?
Well, the main one is obviously just getting to do this in and out every week with you guys, and the feedback that we've gotten, getting to meet so many people as a result of this and friends that we've made through the course of this experience, and people reaching out to us that listen in Australia and Japan and, you know, the far reaches of Europe and everything else. Personally, one of the coolest things I got to do was through the show, not for the show, but through the show, got to go down to the clubhouse a couple of times and interview guys and got to sit in the dugout while they took BP and stuff like that. I mean, just having an experience like that never would have happened if not for Hot Ham and Steve. So it's been really like I know I've told the story, but when I went down there to do interviews one time and they all were coming out and I was like, because you're supposed to be there at a certain time to interview them before batting practice and everything, and they told me I couldn't go in, and I was like, is it a day game, what's going on? And they said, oh, just go walk up in the dugout and wait for them and you can interview them after batting practice. And I walked up and walked into the dugout and every single Brave was sitting there in their white uniforms and all like stopped talking and stared straight at me. And it was picture day.
Did you get the picture?
Oh, yeah, that's right.
I was. I did like the Willie Mays Hayes. I slid right in front of the picture. It was awesome.
That's great. Yeah, I mean, for sure, guys, the really the best thing from these 10 years is that we've hung out every Sunday night
during the season,
you know, during the season, and just all the in-game texting and just all of that has been tremendous, of course. Yeah. And you know, like the friends that we've made, like you said, Kurt, like on Twitter, and just sort of the support in this whole sort of Braves Nation or whatever. I mean, starting with Dave O'Brien almost at the beginning, and he has just been tremendous to us throughout.
Yeah.
More recently, you know, guys like Grant McCauley and the Talking Chop guys, the Nakahoma Nation guys, and you know, it's gratifying.
It's a great community.
To be part of the community, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
And then just two quick things. So, of course, the Javi Lopez interview, and folks who are new to the show, I encourage you to go and Google the Javi Lopez Atlanta Baseball Talk interview, where he all but admits to doing steroids, because it was really something else. And the sort of behind the scenes thing, that when we finished that interview and my mouth was still, you know, my jaw was still on the ground about what he had said, and then he calls me back. Like 30 seconds later, calls my phone, and I'm like, oh my God, he's come to the realization that he said too much and we can't post this stuff about the steroids.
Right.
And he was calling about just a tiny thing that he had said that in retrospect, he thought was going to sound disrespectful about Bobby.
Oh,
and
really?
he wanted me to edit that out because he didn't want to seem disrespectful to Bobby. Which just still, I mean, I just love that so much. And when we were trying to get Dale Murphy on, and we had a friend who knew him, you know, it was a friend of a friend of a friend. And like he had been given my number and we hadn't heard from him for like 2 weeks and we felt like it wasn't going to happen. And then one night my phone rings and it's Dale. And I'm like, oh, my God, finally, we're going to. And I pick it up and he has clearly butt dialed me. Because he's like at a barbecue or something. I hear him talking to people and there's a bunch of people all around and I'm yelling, Dale, Dale, into the phone, and nothing. Yeah, it was really great. It was great. We ended up getting Dale too, and he was super nice.
Now my favorite moment of the past 10 years. I'm taking your favorite moment. It's mine now.
So many of the players, I will say, virtually all of the players that we've gotten the chance to talk to have really been
so
tremendous.
Great. Well, yeah. Who's arranged so many of these conversations, has been so generous and nice to us. Our fans have, like, almost everyone you encounter is really supportive and great. It's such a nice community. It's such a fun thing to do with great people.
Absolutely. And it is insane that it's 10 years, guys. I mean, really, it's just, I can't quite wrap my head around it, that it was 10 years ago.
We have not won a playoff series since we've been doing this show.
Maybe there's a correlation.
Oh, my God. That's so right. We really have to keep going for a couple more years, at least get to 19, when I think we might have a chance.
Yes. Maybe we'll stop as a service to everyone.
Well, we'll let our sons take it over at some point.
Yeah,
that's right. All right, guys, let's get back to current times and talk about some headlines from this 2-4 week, as every week has been really since the team went to 500. So first up, Folty, a Jekyll and Hyde week, right? Awful to start the week, and then Sunday's finale. Against the Rockies was not bad, a bit of a struggle, but only gave up one run. So, you know, it wasn't so long ago we were talking about that he had turned the corner, and he was just going to be the ace of the staff in 2018. And now we find ourselves where we are. So, Kurt, do you trust Folty anymore?
I guess on a long-term scale, I feel like we have to. It makes me nervous that he was pitching so well, and then it was a couple of starts, some adversity that hit him, and he reverted, like, not even back to a couple of steps back, but it was like the tantrums on the mound and really expressive stuff. And I think that stuff is more corrosive than, like, throwing too many balls or whatever the case might be.
I think that leads to it.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And there's certain, yes, you're right. Absolutely. They're certainly tied. And he even admitted so. They, I'm sure it was DOB, interviewed him after that start when he was clearly exasperated and probably was getting squeezed. But, you know, that those are the types of things that you really got to get under control. And you see it, and as, you know, as obviously as bad as Tehran's been in his, disappointing, I should say, as Tehran's been this year, he still remains pretty unflappable. And for a guy that you really have a lot, you can't have a number one be a guy who has emotional problems on the mound. You know, I mean, that's just something that he has got to overcome and has got to get a handle on.
Do you think, Curtis, you think that with maturity he will, or do you think this is just a fatal flaw for him?
Yeah, I mean, you never know. You would hope that he overcomes it and that, you know, I mean, obviously Smoltz had stuff like that he was able to overcome when he was a young guy. And of course, now he's in the Hall of Fame. So yeah. It certainly is not outside the purview of reality that he could get it under grips. But, you know, I mean, there's going to be times when guys are going to struggle over the course of a long season, and he can't allow that to mushroom into three or four bad starts because he can't get a grip on it.
Yeah, I think it's part of maturing. It's funny you mentioned Smoltz, because Smoltz went to a sports psychologist.
Right.
You know, and so I think it's a big part of what makes him great is that fire, but he just has to mature. And I think that, you know, he's pitched 132 innings this year, on pace to pitch more than he's ever pitched in his career. He pitched like 150 in single A in Houston. But, you know, I think he's wearing down. And I think when he wears down, his discipline erodes a little bit, and he lets himself get tormented. And I think part of his maturity is being able to sustain that discipline that he had at the beginning of the year all the way through. But I think he has it in him.
Yeah, I mean, it may have been naive of all of us to think, oh, he's had five or six good games and it looks like he has his emotions under control, that he was done and past that problem and we're not going to see it again.
No. He will always have that. It's just his ability to control it, you know, is the
right. He has to have more good days on the mound than bad days. I mean, but Sunday's game where he had a bunch of runners all over the bases and he didn't let it get away from him and he bared down. I mean, that is a good sign. That's the kind of stuff he can build on.
Yeah.
And the more he can build on, the more he'll you know, not have these games. Yeah. So, Kurt, I'm with you. We have to trust him. My God, he's a really important part of the foundation of this rotation. If he can't get that together, it'll just be a huge shame. And two, it'll set the plans back.
Yeah. Well, and he can be really good. Last point for me. I mean, absolutely. You know, we see him when he's overpowering and he's got so much talent that it's just refining that. Maybe they should go find Dr. Llewellyn and bring him in and have him talk to Folty too. But yeah, it's there. It just needs to be harnessed.
Yep. So guys, Dansby is not messing around since he's been called up. So if you throw out the first two games after he got called up midweek after the Camargo injury, he's played in 15 games. Over those 15 games, his batting average is .370. His on base is .483 because he's become a walks machine.
Yeah, five this week.
God, 11 11 walks over that 15 game stretch, yeah. 17 hits over that time, three are doubles, two are triples, and Ozzy is keeping pace, right? So he's played in 24 games since getting called up. Take out the first six games when he was just getting his bearings. In those 18 since, he's batting .308. He's on basing .329. He has five doubles, four triples over those 18 games. So, Ham, can we, just be excited?
Yes.
And next question.
Yes, next question. Don't even please stop talking about it because it might not keep going. Yeah. It's so great. I'm very excited. Of course, an idiot because, you know, I was questioning should the Braves bring Dansby back and this was not the right move and it was going to really impact him. And
it was obviously sooner than they wanted to. And to think that it was going to be so dramatic a change was hard to do. But, yeah, I mean, Dansby is really just confident up there.
Yeah, it's very exciting. Very exciting.
And I love that, you know, he's talked about an adjustment that he's made now, that he's closer to the plate, which gives him more coverage for the sliders. And he just looks confident now. I mean, it's really just been amazing. Every game, every game he's getting on base.
Well, and hitting it hard. One of the highest line drive rates in the majors since he's been brought back up, which I know is stats that you guys like to ruminate over.
It's a gem.
Indeed, I dug that out deep. Well, I mean, you talk about Fulte, but you can't go much farther beyond him and not include these two guys. I mean, we have to start seeing some of this stuff come to fruition. I was thinking today as I was doing whatever I was doing, we have to start seeing some of these guys come up and start producing at the major league level. You know, all the talk about the best farm system and all this big plan and all the efforts they put into all this. I mean, if these guys can't come up here and play, then it's irrelevant, you know? And so you start to sort of get nervous at times because you've seen some of these guys that have come up and all with hype and with promise that hasn't come to fruition. So it's nice to see. And I know that, Pam, I was with you being very nervous about Dansby and not wanting to come back up and getting, you know, just getting some time to relax in Gwinnett. And I don't think that that's completely off base. But, yeah, I mean, it's monstrous to have this coming out over the last couple of weeks.
Even Ozzy, you know, was our confidence in him was on a decline after, you know, around the trade deadline. And he was on this all of a sudden on the market and maybe not the future of the franchise at second base. You know, he too was on the – I think he took – his star was not shining as bright. And he came in here and has put his head down and has done great.
Yeah, just producing. Yep. Absolutely.
Yep.
All right, guys. Next up is Shot in the Dark, but first a quick break. All right, Shot in the Dark, our predictions for the coming week. And let's start by reviewing how things went with our listener Shot in the Dark that was sent in by Ute Daddy on Twitter, who predicted that Albies and Swanson would go errorless this week. And it was so close. An errorless week for them both until the eighth inning of Sunday's game, where Swanson whiffed on a ground ball with JJ on the mound, no less. So very close, very close. All right, let's see how the three of us did. So, Ham, you predicted that Brandon Phillips would get his 2,000th hit this week. He came up three shy, ending the week at 1997. All right, Curtis, you predicted that Freddie would hit four home runs and that he would bat over 375. He batted 263, had no homers. And just to rub it in, I don't know if you guys saw the story that he came out this week and said, yeah, by the way, my wrist is really only at 80% and it has really zapped my power.
Right. That came out like the next day after I did my Shot in the Dark.
Yeah.
I was like, come on, Freddie, hook a guy up. Give me that information on Sunday afternoon.
God, what a gamer, though. I mean, between I'm playing hurt, I'm coming back 3 weeks before anyone thought I would, I'll go play third. I mean, the whole thing. Freddie really just talk about devotion to the team. It's amazing.
He is our boy.
Yep.
The man.
All right. And I predicted that across the four starts this week from the kids, one from Sims, one from Newcomb, and two from Fulte, that they would collectively give up 9 earned runs or less. And then Fulte gave up 6 in the first game of the week, which was not a great start. Although amazing how close it ended up, because it ended up at 11 because Sims gave up 0.
Great start.
Fulte only great start. Sims following up that great start in Colorado to then, you know, throw shutout ball in his next start, really encouraging. Fulte gave up 1 on Sunday against the Rockies, and then Newcomb gave up 4.
Yeah.
So, no winners again, guys. No one's on the board for August. It is do or die time. So, Ham, what do you got?
Big stakes. I have that the Braves, and this is a spoiler alert, sorry, for the week ahead, but that the Braves will sweep the Phillies and then get swept by the Cubs in return. So, Braves sweep the Phillies and then get swept by the Cubs.
Sweeping the Phillies may be the darkest of the shots in the dark we've had all year, really.
Yeah, it's going to happen.
All right. Curtis, how about you?
Albies continuing his good work, batting over 320 this week with 5 extra base hits.
All right. I'm going against Hammy, really, that our starters will give up fewer earned runs than the Cubs starters over that 4-game series in Chicago. All right, folks, don't forget to get your shots in the dark in before first pitch on Monday. And if we pick yours, we'll discuss it on next week's show. All right, guys, let's look at the week ahead. 7 games this week, all on the road, 3 at Philadelphia, 4 at the Cubs. And here are the pitching matchups. So Sims faces Aaron Nola and his 3.58 ERA. So let's see if Sims can put together 3 good starts in a row. Really be great. Next up is Dickey versus Mark Leiter Jr. and his 3.86 ERA. And then finishing up in Philly will be Tehran versus Jared Eichhoff and his 4.36. So some decent ERAs we're facing. And also I went back to look and see if Julio had pitched in Philadelphia this year, given all his home runs and everything. And, oh, he did. At the end of July, he pitched 4 2/3 and gave up 8 earned.
Oh, God, I remember that
his game. Last time. In, once I saw that, I remember that game.
Yeah.
Ooh. So, Julio had one of his best starts at SunTrust this week. I mean, all year. He looked great.
Mm-hmm.
Since I think it was his first win at SunTrust since the opener, and really was a much better start for him than that home opener. So really be great if Julio could put a nice start like that together in a bandbox. All right, on to Wrigley, where we'll see Newcomb versus Kyle Hendricks and his 3.45 ERA. Newcomb not so good this week. Against the Rockies, giving up 4, but only 2 walks in his past start. So maybe Newcomb can build on that. Next up, Folty versus John Lackey and his 4.98. Next, we'll see Sims versus John Lester and his 4.37. And finishing up in Chicago will be Dickey for his second start against Jake Arrieta and his 3.49. So, God, you look at Lackey in his 4.98, Lester in his 4.37. It's not the biggest surprise that Chicago's not exactly running away with things. So there's a chance there. All right. So, Curtis, what do you think? What do the Braves do this week?
It makes me nervous about the Phillies. I mean, that's the most pathetic thing I've said in 10 years on this show, but maybe the third most pathetic thing I've ever said.
Easy now. It's not just... throw that out there.
2-4. Let's keep the trend going.
There's 7 games.
No.
We're one side. It's going to be so bad it doesn't even count.
That's right. It's going to be the Julio start.
2-5 then.
All right, Hammy?
Like I said, 3-4.
Right, exactly. Of course. Yeah, I will go 3-4 as well. All right, so guys, one more time. Seriously, happy anniversary.
Happy 10th.
Years is insane.
Thank you to everybody who listens every week.
Yes, exactly. Thank you to everyone who listens. Thank you to Mike, who is the technical guy behind all of this, and Sean, who does our blogs. And, all the listeners, everybody on Twitter, all that. It has been more fun than I could have imagined over these 10 years. And, looking forward to the next 10. All right, that is the show. Everyone, please remember you can find us at Blog Talk Radio, as well as iTunes, Stitcher, and Google Play. And as always, you can find us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com to access our past shows, our blogs, and to post in our comments section. And be sure to follow us on Twitter at ATL Baseball Talk and to like us on Facebook. Thanks again for listening, everyone, and go Braves!
Thanks for listening to Atlanta Baseball Talk, your weekly podcast for all things Atlanta Braves. To find new shows, to post in our forum, or to send a comment, please visit us at AtlantaBaseballTalk.com. How do it-